Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on disaster recovery for SharePoint technologies. My name is Carl Middlebrooks. When you deploy a SharePoint server farm, you'll need to be able to back up and restore content, databases, and search indexes. We'll talk today about the tools and methods available for you to use to help protect your SharePoint deployment. Let's start this session by going into more detail on the topics we will be covering. First, we're going to talk about content recovery. SharePoint Server 2007 allows you to recover pieces of individual content such as documents and lists without having to perform a full database restore. Some of the content recovery tools also allow users to recover their own content without administrator intervention. We'll also talk about disaster recovery. While content recovery solutions allow you to recover content items on an as-needed basis, there are some tools, including a new SharePoint Backup and Restore utility, that allow you to backup and restore your entire SharePoint server farm, including databases, search indexes, and front-end files. We'll see how some of these work and how you can use them to build a good disaster recovery strategy. We'll talk about proactive strategies for disaster recovery and high availability of your SharePoint server farm. As we discuss the various tools that are available to help you protect your SharePoint servers, think about how these tools fit within what your organization is already doing for disaster recovery so that you can design your SharePoint farm to mesh well with the disaster recovery strategies and technologies you're currently using. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of what would be helpful but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we've listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. While SharePoint Server 2007 includes many new features, it will be helpful if you have some experience with current or past versions of SharePoint products, including SharePoint Team Services and SharePoint Portal Server. Familiarity with disaster recovery technologies, concepts, and processes will also be helpful since that's the focus of our session today. Finally, since SharePoint Server uses SQL Server databases to store data, and you'll need to manage disaster recovery for the SharePoint Server databases, it will be helpful to have some experience with SQL Server, particularly in backing up and restoring SQL Server databases. To cover the topics mentioned and to keep the session flow going, we've divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we're going to discuss how to recover SharePoint content that has, for example, been accidentally deleted by a user or administrator. After we've covered that, we'll talk about full-scale disaster recovery where we need to recover entire SharePoint databases or search indexes. Finally, we'll spend some time discussing high availability strategies, including log shipping and failover clustering. You have a number of tools available to help recover content as needed. First, SharePoint Server 2007 includes a two-stage recycle bin that has functionality similar to that of the Windows recycle bin. Deleted items are moved to the recycle bin to help recover them in case of accidental deletion. Restoring a document from the recycle bin simply moves the item back into its original list while checking to make sure that the file name doesn't conflict with existing files. We'll talk more about how the two-stage process works shortly. SharePoint Server also supports versioning so that SharePoint will keep track of all edits to documents and list items. You can see the changes that have been made, when the change occurred, and who made the changes. You can use versioning to retrieve a prior version of a document or list item. The recycle bin does not work for recovery of entire sites, but there is a web delete event that can be bound to and is fully extensible, so that a site can be backed up when it is deleted. These content recovery solutions are normally user-driven. Users can pull documents from the recycle bin or revert to older versions of documents without any intervention from administrators. Sometimes, though, the administrator will use these tools to recover individual pieces of content. Now we'll talk about the recycle bin in more detail. As we just discussed, the recycle bin is designed to be user-driven so that users can recover their own content without the need for administrator intervention in most cases. The recycle bin supports lists, list items, document libraries, and individual documents. All these types of content can be recovered from the recycle bin by either users or an administrator. The security on the recycle bin is trimmed down to make content recovery less complex for users and administrators. The recycle bin has two stages, end user and administrator. This is an important distinction because the two stages have different uses. In the first stage, the end user stage, when the user deletes content such as a document or list item, the content is moved to the recycle bin. At this point, the content appears in both the end user and the site collection recycle bin. Content in the first stage recycle bin can be recovered by either the user or the site collection administrator. If the recycle bin is not manually emptied by the user, the default setting is to automatically empty content from the recycle bin after 30 days. The second stage of the recycle bin is when the user empties the recycle bin. At this point, from the perspective of the user, the content has been permanently deleted. However, the content still appears in the site collection recycle bin. A user cannot restore content from the second stage recycle bin, but the site collection administrator can. As we just mentioned, the recycle bin works at the site collection level. Content deleted by the user appears in the site collection recycle bin. Content is recoverable by users or an administrator until the content is deleted from the site collection recycle bin by the site collection administrator. Let's see a demonstration of how the recycle bin works. In this demonstration, we'll see how to recover deleted content from the SharePoint recycle bin. As we just discussed, SharePoint Server 2007 includes a two-stage recycle bin that allows users and administrators to recover accidentally deleted content. Though administrators can use it to recover data, the recycle bin is really designed to allow users to recover their own content without administrator intervention. First, we'll take a look at how to configure the recycle bin in SharePoint Central Administration. The recycle bin settings are found in the Web Application Management section. By default, the recycle bin is configured to retain items for 30 days. Items older than 30 days will automatically get purged. For our site, we'll give users a little longer to recover their files, 45 days. The second stage recycle bin can be enabled or disabled. By default, it's enabled, and it's a good idea to leave it enabled unless doing so would create disk shortage problems on your server. Enabling the second stage recycle bin adds to the disk quota, but we're not expecting to run into any problems here, so we'll leave this enabled. Now we'll go to the main SharePoint portal site for Litware. The Site Collection Recycle Bin appears in the Site Settings area of the portal. Here we can see that the change we just made in the central administration site is reflected here. Items older than 45 days will automatically be emptied from the recycle bin, and right now the site collection recycle bin is empty. Now let's see how to use the first stage recycle bin. To do this, we're going to sign into the portal site as a regular user, Julian Isla. When we go to my site, we also need to log in as Julian. We'll refresh my site to get Julian's personalized content. As we mentioned, the recycle bin can be used to recover lists and list items, and we'll illustrate this by creating a new list here. We'll choose a custom list, name it, and then finish creating it. Let's add a list item to the list also. Julian may decide he doesn't need this list any longer and decides to delete it from his site. Like Windows, SharePoint informs Julian that the list will be sent to the recycle bin and asks him to confirm. Once he confirms, the list is deleted, and we can see that it no longer appears in his quick launch bar on the left. In addition to list and list items, the recycle bin also stores documents and document libraries. Julian first needs to add some documents to his shared documents library. He's written a couple of drafts of a new project outline and wants to add those to his shared documents. Now, both draft documents are stored in Julian's shared documents library. Julian now decides to delete draft 1 since he's already got a second draft finished. Later, Julian also decides to delete the second draft of the project outline. Now, both the documents and the list are present in Julian's recycle bin, and they'll stay here for 45 days if he doesn't take any action to either restore the items or empty the recycle bin manually. Julian realizes he needs the second draft of his project outline back and restores it from the recycle bin. Items restored from the recycle bin will be placed back into their original locations. In this case, Julian can expect to find his document back in his shared documents library. Julian has restored the only document he needed from the first stage recycle bin and decides to delete the remaining items. When he goes back to his personal site and looks in the shared documents library, he finds the second draft of his project outline just as he expected. Now, if Julian decides that there was information in the first draft of his project outline that he needs to recover, the documents are no longer in the first stage recycle bin. He now has to go to the second stage recycle bin, the site collection recycle bin. There are two views in this area. The first shows items that are currently in the end user recycle bin. We need to look for items that have been deleted from Julian's recycle bin, though. Here we see both the document and the list that were emptied from Julian's recycle bin. We'll restore the first draft of the project outline. Again, the document will be returned to its original location. Julian is quite sure that he doesn't need the custom list any longer and deletes it from the second stage recycle bin. A dialog warns that items deleted from here may be completely unrecoverable. Back in Julian's site, both the first and second drafts of the project outline document are found in his shared documents library. There are some special features of the recycle bin that you should know about. The recycle bin has disk quota features that apply to it. The first stage recycle bin counts towards the site collection quota. The second stage recycle bin is part of the specific recycle bin quota that is set separately from the site collection quota. The recycle bin also includes an auto-delete service. This service permanently deletes items from both the first and second stage recycle bins that have been deleted for more than the specified number of days. By default, the auto-delete service is set to delete items from both stages of the recycle bin after 30 days. There are pros and cons to using versioning in SharePoint Server. Versioning in SharePoint Server supports both list item and document versioning. Versioning also enables users to retrieve earlier versions of documents and list items without administrator intervention. This helps users recover content quickly and reduces administration overhead. However, versions of documents and list items count toward the site quota. If large documents have frequent revisions, your site will reach the quota limits more frequently than a site that does not have versioning enabled. Also, versioning functionality needs to be specifically enabled per list. The default behavior is for versioning to be disabled. So, as you create lists, you must remember to explicitly enable versioning for the list. Finally, there is no versioning support for folders, webs, or sites. Only documents and list items have versioning support. SharePoint Server also includes a web delete event that can be used for content recovery. The SharePoint object model allows developers to custom build backup solutions at the web delete event. The web delete event is an event that fires when a SharePoint site is deleted. It fires before the delete actually occurs so that some actions can be taken. For example, let's say a site owner decides to delete a site on the SharePoint server and issues the command to delete the site. When this happens, the web delete event is fired. In this case, a developer has written custom code that hooks onto the web delete event to perform a backup of the site when the event fires. Once the site has been successfully backed up, the site will actually be deleted from the SharePoint server. The web delete event is extensible so developers can easily perform any number of actions when the event fires. However, it's important to remember that there is no out-of-the-box solution for using the web delete event, so custom code must be written in order to take advantage of it. Now let's see what's next on the agenda. Now that we've talked about how to recover content, we're going to talk about disaster recovery methods for SharePoint. There are several different disaster recovery solutions available to you. SharePoint Server 2007 includes a backup and restore utility that can run from any of the front-end web servers in the server farm. This utility backs up and restores all databases within the server farm or all databases from a single site, and restores content indexes and content sources on a portal, and even restores index servers. Because SharePoint Server uses SQL Server, you can back up your SharePoint databases using SQL Server Backup and Restore utilities. If your organization is already using SQL Server, you're probably already using these utilities to back up and restore your SQL Server databases, so it's easy to include SharePoint Server databases in the backup routine. You can also use third-party solutions or the Volume Shadow service in Windows Server 2003 to perform backups. These solutions fall outside the scope of our discussion today, however. Disaster recovery solutions can be time-consuming and result in additional downtime and lost content if used incorrectly. It's important to remember that you should only use disaster recovery procedures in the event of a catastrophe. SharePoint Backup and Restore is a new tool included with SharePoint Server 2007. The SharePoint Server 2007 Backup and Restore utility provides out-of-the-box user interface and command line access for the SharePoint administrator to backup and restore SharePoint databases and search indexes. In this example, we have a SharePoint server farm with the associated databases, such as the configuration database, content databases, shared service provider or SSP databases, and the search index. Using the SharePoint Central Administration Console, an administrator can use the user interface or command line SharePoint Backup and Restore utility to backup and restore the SharePoint server farm. The SharePoint server databases, which are SQL server based, will be backed up and restored using SQL backup mechanisms, and the front-end files will be backed up through standard file server based mechanisms. This gives you a comprehensive backup of your databases, your front-end content, and your search index. You have a fine-grained control over backups and restores at the content database level, so you can backup or restore exactly what you need, which makes backup and restore processes faster. When restoring, the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility will automatically hook up the SharePoint databases and search index, so that when the restore process is complete, your SharePoint server farm is automatically brought back online and is ready for use without any additional administrator intervention. SharePoint Backup and Restore supports both full and differential backups to give you flexibility in your backup and restore processes. Also, the SharePoint Backup and Restore provides an extensible framework for third-party applications. We'll take a closer look at SharePoint Backup and Restore in the next demonstration. During this demonstration, we'll learn how to use the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility to backup and recover SharePoint server data. To illustrate SharePoint Server's Backup and Restore utility, we're going to add a Business Data Catalog, or BDC, application to the shared services on the server. We've got an XML file that defines a BDC application, and we'll go ahead and import it here. Once the import is complete, the BDC application is part of the shared services on our SharePoint server. Because we're demonstrating backup and restore features, we're not going to do any further configuration of the BDC application as you would do in a production environment. As we mentioned earlier, SharePoint Server's two-stage recycle bin is designed for recovery of end-user content like documents and lists, so services such as web applications cannot be recovered with the recycle bin. Now that we've created a new application on our SharePoint server, we'll go ahead and run a backup. The backup and restore utility is in the operations section of the central administration site. In creating a backup, we have several options we can choose. We can back up the entire SharePoint farm, which will include all the configuration data, SharePoint databases, and search indexes. The ability to back up and restore search indexes is unique to the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility. While you can back up and restore the databases using standard SQL Server Backup and Restore tools, SQL Server Backup tools cannot back up SharePoint Server search indexes. For this demonstration, we're just going to back up Shared Services 1, which contains the BDC application we just imported. We have the choice of performing a full or differential backup. The full backup will back up all of the information, while a differential backup will back up only information that has been added or changed since the time of the last full backup. We haven't performed a backup before, so we'll leave this set to perform a full backup. We've created a share on our server to hold the backups, and based on the items we've selected, we can see how much disk space the backups will take. We'll click OK to start the backup. SharePoint Server takes a few moments to process the information we just submitted, so you may not see the backup process begin right away. The status page automatically refreshes periodically, but you can also manually refresh the page. The backup takes a few minutes to run and then informs us that it's complete. You can look at a complete history of backups and restore jobs that have been run on this SharePoint server in the View History section. Now let's cause some data loss. We'll do this with the AdventureWorks BDC application we imported earlier. We'll delete the application from the catalog. It's important to remember that there is no recycle bin for deleted items such as BDC applications, so to recover the AdventureWorks application, we'll need to use the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility. Now let's go back and restore the lost data. When restoring, the first thing you need to specify is the location of the backups, so the backup files need to be present in the UNC path. The location contains just one backup, the Shared Services 1 backup we performed earlier. If you have other backup sets in this share, you'll be able to select those as well. For example, if you've performed differential backups after a full backup, you would first need to restore the last full backup and then come back and restore the last differential backup in order to bring the SharePoint server completely up to date. Notice that you cannot select items that are not present in the backup set. Both the farm and SP search items are grayed out. We'll select Shared Services 1. You can create a new site from a backup, but we need to get data back to this site, so we'll select the Overwrite option. Be careful using the Overwrite option in a production environment, as it will cause you to lose any changes that have been made to the restored data since the time of the backup. If you're creating a new site, you can specify all the new information about the site, including the URL and username the site should run under. We'll click OK to start the restore. As with the backup, it takes SharePoint a few moments to process the job before you will see progress on the restore job. If any part of the restore has problems, you can see details about the error messages here and also in the SharePoint server logs. Now that the restore is complete, we'll go back to Shared Services 1. We can see that our AdventureWorks BDC application has been restored and is ready for use again in our SharePoint server. As mentioned during the presentation, the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility does not include a scheduler, so if you want to schedule regular backups, you'll need to use an external job scheduler. We'll look at how to schedule differential backups using the Schedule Task utility that's included with Windows Server. stsadm.exe is the command line tool used to perform many SharePoint administration tasks, including backup and restore. We're going to schedule differential backups right now, so we'll give this task an appropriate name and schedule it to run daily. We'll confirm the account and password the job should run under. We need to set some advanced properties for this task before it will be ready to run, so we'll select the checkbox and click Finish. The path to the stsadm utility is already included here, but we need to specify additional options to perform the differential backup. First, the -o option specifies the type of operation to be performed. There are several different types of operations, including backup and restore, which can be used. We'll specify a backup operation. The -url option specifies the URL to the SharePoint site. We want to specify our primary portal site, moss.litwareinc.com, here, though you can specify any SharePoint URL to which you have access. The -directory option specifies the UNC path where the backup file should be placed. Finally, the -backup method option specifies the type of backup that should run. It can be set to full or differential, and we'll specify differential here. Once the options are set, we'll click OK. Since we've changed the task, we have to reconfirm the account and password information for the task. Now the task is listed in the scheduled tasks and will run at the scheduled time. If you wanted to schedule weekly full backups of the SharePoint site or backups of the central administration site, you could create additional jobs as needed. To make sure the differential backup works, we'll go ahead and manually run the job here. While the job is running, we can see the output of the stsadm command, which shows us the progress of the backup. When the backup is finished, we can see when it was last run. Let's go back into the central administration site to see the results. Even though we used the command line utility to run the backup still appears in the backup and restore history page. You can use the Backup and Restore utility through the Central Administration site to restore from backups that were created with the Command Line tool, just as you can use the Command Line tool to restore from backups created in the Central Administration site. Whether you backup and restore through the Central Administration site or with the Command Line utility is up to you, based on your needs. Now let's cause some data loss. We'll do this with the AdventureWorks BDC application we imported earlier. We'll delete the application from the catalog. It's important to remember that there is no recycle bin for deleted items such as BDC applications, so to recover the AdventureWorks application, we'll need to use the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility. Now let's go back and restore the lost data. When restoring, the first thing you need to specify is the location of the backups, so the backup files need to be present in the UNC path. The location contains just one backup, the shared services one backup we performed earlier. If you have other backup sets in this share, you'll be able to select those as well. For example, if you've performed differential backups after a full backup, you would first need to restore the last full backup and then come back and restore the last differential backup in order to bring the SharePoint server completely up to date. Notice that you cannot select items that are not present in the backup set. Both the farm and SP search items are grayed out. We'll select Shared Services 1. You can create a new site from a backup, but we need to get data back to this site, so we'll select the Overwrite option. Be careful using the Overwrite option in a production environment, as it will cause you to lose any changes that have been made to the restored data since the time of the backup. If you're creating a new site, you can specify all the new information about the site, including the URL and username the site should run under. We'll click OK to start the restore. As with the backup, it takes SharePoint a few moments to process the job before you will see progress on the restore job. If any part of the restorer has problems, you can see details about the error messages here and also in the SharePoint server logs. Now that the restore is complete, we'll go back to Shared Services 1. We can see that our AdventureWorks BDC application has been restored and is ready for use again in our SharePoint server. As mentioned during the presentation, the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility does not include a scheduler, so if you want to schedule regular backups, you'll need to use an external job scheduler. We'll look at how to schedule differential backups using the Schedule Task utility that's included with Windows Server. stsadm.exe is the command line tool used to perform many SharePoint administration tasks, including backup and restore. We're going to schedule differential backups right now, so we'll give this task an appropriate name and schedule it to run daily. We'll confirm the account and password the job should run under. We need to set some advanced properties for this task before it will be ready to run, so we'll select the checkbox and click Finish. The path to the STS-ADM utility is already included here, but we need to specify additional options to perform the differential backup. First, the -O option specifies the type of operation to be performed. There are several different types of operations, including backup and restore, which can be used. We'll specify a backup operation. The -URL option specifies the URL to the SharePoint site. We want to specify our primary portal site, moss.litwareinc.com, here, though you can specify any SharePoint URL to which you have access. The -directory option specifies the UNC path where the backup file should be placed. Finally, the -backup method option specifies the type of backup that should run. It can be set to full or differential, and we'll specify differential here. Once the options are set, we'll click OK. Since we've changed the task, we have to reconfirm the account and password information for the task. Now the task is listed in the scheduled tasks and will run at the scheduled time. If you wanted to schedule weekly full backups of the SharePoint site or backups of the central administration site, you could create additional jobs as needed. To make sure the differential backup works, we'll go ahead and manually run the job here. While the job is running, we can see the output of the STS-ADM command, which shows us the progress of the backup. When the backup is finished, we can see when it was last run. Let's go back into the central administration site to see the results. Even though we used the command line utility to run the backup still appears in the Backup and Restore History page. You can use the Backup and Restore utility through the central administration site to restore from backups that were created with the command line tool, just as you can use the command line tool to restore from backups created in the central administration site. Whether you backup and restore through the central administration site or with the command line utility is up to you, based on your needs. There are a few limitations to SharePoint Backup and Restore that you should know about. One of the limitations of the SharePoint Server Backup and Restore utility is that it does not come with an out-of-the-box scheduler to automate your backups. One way to overcome this limitation is to use the command line utility to perform the backup operation and create a task with the Windows Task Scheduler that's part of Windows Server. Another limitation is that SharePoint Backup and Restore only backs up the SharePoint databases and search indexes. You will need to back up your front-end files manually. We also recommend that you keep images of your web front-ends for quick, reliable restoration. In the event that a restore is necessary, long restore times mean low availability for your SharePoint server farm. Another option you can use is a SQL-only backup and restore. One of the benefits of using SQL-only backup and restore is that you can reuse your existing backup technology and processes. If your organization already backs up and restores SQL Server databases, adding the SharePoint Server databases into the backup schedule is easy to do with minimal administration overhead. Also, SQL-only backup and restore is not application-specific. On the downside, when restoring SharePoint Server databases from a SQL-only backup, you have to reattach and clean up the databases before they're ready for use. The amount of work you have to do will vary depending on how frequently you're backing up and what type of backups you're performing, but you do have to do some work following the restore to get your SharePoint Server farm online again. A SQL-only backup cannot backup the SharePoint server search indexes. These must be backed up separately using the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility. Let's move on to our next agenda item. Now that we've discussed some of the methods you can use to recover SharePoint data in the event of a disaster, we'll talk about some techniques you can use for high availability of SharePoint Server 2007. One common technique for providing high availability is using log shipping. Log shipping allows you to automatically send transaction log backups from a primary database on a primary server instance to one or more secondary databases on separate secondary server instances. The transaction log backups are applied to each of the secondary databases individually. This gives you a warm backup for quick content recovery. For example, let's say we have an active SharePoint server farm that is log shipping to a read-only mirror farm. By using the log shipping mirror farm, you are able to effectively replicate the primary server farm on the secondary read-only mirror farm. By using SQL log shipping, the content of the SharePoint server databases is transferred to the read-only farm, so the read-only farm is always up to date with recent content. In the event of a disaster, the router can switch traffic from the primary server farm to the read-only server farm within minutes. This allows you to minimize downtime of your SharePoint services and applications while you restore access to the primary server farm. There are some limitations to log shipping that you should be aware of. Configuration changes to the primary farm must be manually replicated on the secondary farm. As an administrator, you'll have to remember to make configuration changes in both places in order to ensure the reliable operation of the log shipping environment. There's no way to detect errors that are committed to the database, so erroneous data that gets committed to the primary farm will be log shipped and then committed to the database on the secondary farm. You should not expect a log shipping environment to provide protection against erroneous data or enable you to revert to prior versions of content databases. Log shipping requires additional hardware. You need additional servers, both SharePoint servers and SQL servers, as well as additional disks, in order to set up the secondary farm to receive the transaction logs from the primary farm SQL servers. The SharePoint server search indexer must run separately on the secondary farm. The search indexer from the primary farm cannot index content on the secondary farm. Finally, the secondary farm must be read-only. This means that in the event of a catastrophe, while users will still be able to access their SharePoint server applications and data, they will not be able to commit changes to the data. The primary farm must be brought back online in order to enable read-write access to the SharePoint applications and data again. You can also use failover clustering to provide high availability. Failover clustering provides high availability and accommodates backups, redundancy, and performance. Clustering also provides a hot backup for short recovery times in the event of a catastrophe. For example, let's say we have SharePoint Server web front ends linked to a SQL Server failover cluster with two nodes, node A and node B. The nodes share a disk array. A heartbeat between the two nodes allows the systems to detect their online state. If node A goes offline, the server cluster is aware of this and will automatically fail over all traffic destined for node A to node B. This means that the SharePoint server applications are kept available without any administrator intervention. Log shipping and clustering offer different benefits and drawbacks. With failover clustering, the secondary node takes over immediately upon failure of the primary node without intervention, giving you a hot backup. With log shipping, a slight delay occurs before the secondary node takes over, giving you a warm backup. Also, with log shipping, some administrator intervention is required to route traffic to the secondary node upon failure. As we discussed earlier, with failover clustering, failure is detected automatically and the failover is automatic, requiring no administrator intervention. Using log shipping, failure of the primary node is not detected automatically and failover is not automatic. The administrator must take action to route traffic to the secondary node. Both failover clustering and log shipping protect against a failed server service. However, failover clustering does not protect against failed storage. As we saw earlier, failover clustering relies on a shared storage array, so failure of the array will result in your SharePoint server farm being unavailable. Log shipping, because it requires completely separate hardware, will protect against failed storage on the primary node. With failover clustering, all databases are protected from failure. When using log shipping, only log ship databases are protected. Databases that are not configured for log shipping will be unavailable in the event of a disaster. Both failover clustering and log shipping are transactionally consistent. That is, transactions committed on the primary node are guaranteed to be committed on the secondary node in both scenarios. However, only failover clustering is transactionally concurrent, meaning that transactions are committed simultaneously on both nodes. With log shipping, there is a delay before the transaction logs from the primary node are shipped and committed to the secondary node. Failover clusters are limited in how far the nodes can be from one another in order to maintain transactional concurrency. By contrast, using log shipping, you can locate the secondary nodes any distance from the primary node because we don't have to maintain transactional concurrency for log shipping. With failover clustering, recovery happens in seconds or minutes because the failure is detected automatically, and failover happens without administrator intervention. In a log shipping environment, recovery can take longer because neither failure detection nor failover are automatic. Administrator intervention is required, which takes longer than failover clustering. Let's review what we've learned in today's session. One key feature of SharePoint Server 2007 is that users now have more options for recovering their own content without requiring administrator intervention. By using the recycle bin and versioning features of SharePoint Server, users can recover from errors quickly and with tools that are familiar and easy to use. The SharePoint Backup and Restore utility provides you with both user interface and command line tools to perform comprehensive backup and recovery of your SharePoint databases, front-end content, and search indexes. When using the SharePoint Backup and Restore utilities, you can restore your SharePoint server and immediately have all the post-restore work performed and the server brought online for immediate usage. You can also use SQL-only backup and restore processes if they better fit your organization's needs. We've also seen today that with content recovery tools, backup options such as the SharePoint Backup and Restore utility and SQL-only backups, and high availability strategies such as log shipping and failover clustering, that you have a great many options for implementing a SharePoint disaster recovery strategy that fits well within your organization's current disaster recovery processes, as well as one that gives you the flexibility to implement new disaster recovery strategies. It's important to understand the options available to you and choose the ones that provide the best balance of availability, reliability, and resource usage for your organization. To get more information on the products and technologies we've covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/technet/dsk-106 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. First Look 2007 Office discusses how Office 2007 has changed and how to integrate Office 2007 into your business. Microsoft SharePoint 2006 development discusses how to create solutions using SharePoint 2006. Workflow in Office 2007 discusses how to use Office 2007 to help information workers share data, enforce processes and business rules, and work more efficiently, whether together or solo. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals who support and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Experience the 2007 Microsoft Office System, which will be available soon. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available. Starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP, you can become a fully certified system administrator, MCSA, system engineer, MCSE, or desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, here's Carolyn McGrath, TechNet Relationship Marketing Manager.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience.